It was growing late, and still there was no sign of Engain. Could Ninian have been mistaken? A roke had settled in early that afternoon, and the rain dripped from the roofs of Oxford with a dismal insistence. Walter had placed himself under the entrance at St. Martin's, but the fear that he might miss her led him to venture out constantly around all the points of the quadrivium. He was wet to the skin. Church bells began to toll. Ordinarily they had a profound effect on him, particularly at the close of day in Oxford, for there was something in the atmosphere of the grey old town which lent an additional solemnity to the tolling, and fitted the sound to every mood. They could ring loud and resonant like a call to battle. They could be gay and exciting, giving a lift to the heart as well as the heels. They could be slow and sad with a warning of the futility of this earthly life. But mostly they were as sweet and ravishing as the swish of a swift's wings, bringing a lump of happiness to the throat. But today Walter felt only impatience as he counted the strokes. 4 o'clock! Was Engain really riding up from London with her father, or had it been another of Ninian's stupid jokes? He began to suspect the latter, but he dared not give up his vigil. He had not seen Engain for nearly 2 years, and Ninian had been hinting that she was soon to wed. It would be 2 more years before he returned home from the university. If he did not catch a glimpse of her now, he might never see her again. A beggar with wet, bare legs, and a face blue from the damp and cold, came up the steps of the church. As a matter of habit, he began his usual quaver of, "Alms, fair sir!" holding out his wooden clack-dish. Then he slanted a look at the wet student lurking in the stone entrance, and a scornful laugh took the place of the professional whine. "Gown!" he exclaimed, with a thumb at his splayed nose. "I'm of a mind to rob me own buckskin and flip ye a coin, ye starved kestrel!" Another hour passed. Walter shivered with the cold, very nearly convinced now that there would be no party riding through to Tressling. He should have been sensible, he said to himself, and spent the time at his studies. He still had so much to learn. But still he lingered, nursing the dregs of hope. Not a single pedestrian had crossed the quadrivium in the last half hour. No sound was to be heard but the drip, drip of the rain. Then his heart gave a bound. A clatter of hoofs sounded from the direction of the east, and a dozen or more riders on horseback came clumping over the cobbles. His doubts were resolved when he saw mud-splattered Whirlycoat creaking along in the rear of the procession. Engain's mother was an invalid, and did all her travelling on wheels. It was not his purpose to be seen, so he hugged close to one of the pillars. The squire in the lead spied him, nevertheless, and reined in his horse, calling out in a peremptory voice, "You fellow! Which turn do we take for the Chelten Road?" Walter was giving hurried instructions, without leaving his secluded post, when another rider drew level with the squire. Under a heavy fur hood he saw the green of a couvre-chef, and under that again the sparkle of the loveliest blue eyes in all the world. It was Engain. "Walter of Gurney," she cried. As usual, there was more than a hint of mockery in her voice. "What do you do here, good Walter? Have you lingered over long at your horizons? Surely you should be back at your books." "I heard you were to ride through from London," he answered. "And you waited in this rain to see me." Clearly she was much pleased. She raised a glove to brush back the encroaching scarf and smiled at him. "I am very much flattered, but such devotion would more become one who strives to fit himself for the vows of knighthood, Sir Clerk." Her father reined in beside her and scowled at Walter. The Lord of Tressling was always in his cups, and there was an unsteadiness now to the hand with which he wiped his brow. "The whelp of Gurney," he said. Then he threw back his head and indulged in a loud roar of laughter. "Well met! You may take a message to your grandfather. Tell the old nip-cheese he's been wasting his time." Then he turned to his daughter. "How often, child, must I tell you not to demean yourself in this way? This base-born fellow's beneath your notice." Walter's pride got the better of his discretion. He walked down the steps to the street level. "The Gurney strain is a nobler one than Tressling, my lord," he said. "We've held our land for more than 5 centuries." The Lord of Tressling laughed again. You crow loudly, my young cockerel, for one who can't claim an honest share of that noble blood, he said. Come, girl, on with you. We must make trestling if we ride all night.
But mother is ill, protested Endgame. She can't travel much farther tonight.
It's that lumbering coach which has held us back, said her father. I'll have no more of this endless packing and unpacking, this mewling over sheets and blankets, and running for hot possets and especiers pills. We ride straight through, I tell you.
He turned for a final besotted word with Walter.
Count yourself lucky I don't have my man Gullen here beat a proper respect into you, fella. Stand back,